Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is WTIC's Law Talk, a project of the Hartford County Bar Association. If you have a legal question, call now, 860-522-WTIC or 800-966-WTIC. And now, it's time for Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Law Talk on a sultry, summer-like Saturday afternoon, he alliterated. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association, with you here from noon and clock, regardless of what the weather is outside. This is your legal interactive toolbox. And what does all that mean? What it means is that we dispense legal information, advice, help you navigate your way through that thicket of laws and rules and regulations that seem to bedevil all of us at one point or another. And we do it primarily by taking your phone calls. Looking forward to hearing from you at 860-522-WTIC, also known as 860-522-9842, if numbers are easier than letters on your device. We're here until 1 o'clock. If you're thinking about giving us a call, better to do it a little bit earlier than later, because that gives us the maximum opportunity to try to help you out. So my producer, Tom, is going to be happy to take your call. I'll put you up on the screen, and we'll help you out just as best we can. In the meantime, got a bunch of interesting different cases that we want to tell you about, because we want to make sure that we use this to provide a little bit of education, certainly some information, and if we can make it a little bit of entertaining in the process, well, that's not a bad thing either. First up, number one, we've got a case from the New Haven Superior Court. It's a food poisoning case. It's got a bunch of unusual twists and turns to it, and we haven't really done one of those on Law Talk, so we're going to go over some of that, and I think you'll find that to be pretty interesting. There's some interesting takeaways from it also. We're going to follow that up with a case involving a breach of a right of privacy regarding patients' medical records. And this woman sued her OBGYN group for the improper, unauthorized, and unknown to her release of her medical records to a party that was suing her. We'll tell you what happened and what we think about that and what we can all take away from it. After that, we're going to pay a visit to the housing court, and landlord-tenant law has always been an area that our listeners have been interested in. This case is no different. This case involves a landlord who's trying to get a judgment against tenants which he evicted from their apartment, and he's looking for damages for the damage they caused to the unit and for the cost of the repairs that he and his family did. Well, we'll tell you what happened at the court. There's a takeaway that's going to be helpful for landlords. And yes, there's a takeaway that's helpful for you tenants also. So if we have time after that, there's a really interesting decision from the Connecticut Supreme Court that settles an issue that has been raised in lots and lots of litigation, especially commercial litigation. A landlord of a store or a shopping mall or someplace like that suing a tenant for not paying rent during the COVID-19 shutdowns, and the tenants saying, well, wait a minute, there's a number of defenses here because the executive orders prevented us from carrying out business. So this is an issue that has been heavily litigated in the courts with varying results, but the Supreme Court has now finally spoken, and so we'll have some advice for people that are in the position of the landlord, the lessor, or in the position of the tenant, the lessee, who has raised some of these defenses as to where this decision leaves you on both sides. Okay, so we're going to be doing that, and we'll be taking your phone calls at 860-522-9842, 522-WTIC, and we're going to be doing that, but first we'll get to this first story of the day for us. Okay, there we go. That is our musical introduction to a story about food poisoning. And Tom tells me that's Def Leppard, and it fits right in. So this is a case that has a couple of really unusual twists and turns. We are going to describe a little bit about what happened because the court had to do that. Okay, it's a real case. It's a decided case. We'll use the names that are real names just for the sake of keeping it simple, okay? This is a case called Gibbs versus Ahmed. And as you can imagine, Gibbs is the customer in the restaurant and Ahmed is the proprietor. So the first question that comes up is, why isn't this an entity? And we'll talk more about that and more about the significance of that going forward, okay? So anyway, they filed suit here, and there was a default for Ahmed for failure to appear, and the case eventually went forward on, it's called a hearing in damages. And it took something like 7 years from when the case was filed until the time that it was finally decided. And that's extraordinary. And there's no evidence that it had anything to do with court delays. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. Now, at a hearing in damages, the first thing that happens is that the plaintiff, in this case, the patron of the restaurant, doesn't have to prove that the restaurant breached any duty. But it does have to prove that the actions or the omissions of the restaurant were a substantial factor in the harm it suffered. So there was a hearing, and then the court asked for some post-trial memoranda from the plaintiff's attorney, and it wrote a decision. And so we're going to summarize the court's decision because this is what it found, okay? It said that LaShawn Gibbs purchased and consumed chicken from the defendant's restaurant, Crown Fried Chicken. Within an hour, he became extremely ill. Nausea, vomiting continued throughout the night into the early morning. Now, it gets a little bit worse, so just bear with me because it's important to explain part of it. When he noticed he was vomiting blood, went to the emergency department at Yale New Haven Hospital, was admitted, had complaints of nausea, severe vomiting, abdominal pain, diarrhea, chills. He was observed throughout the day. They thought his severe acute vomiting caused something called a Mallory Weiss tear, resulting in bleeding. And they ruled out peptic ulcer and upper GI bleed as a cause for the illness. Now, that's important because that has to do with causation, okay? Point number one, you got a default for failure to appear. That means they're liable. It doesn't mean that what they did was a substantial factor in your problems. So this takes care of that. The court found that they ruled out these other causes. So after a day in the hospital, the vomiting subsided, put him on a liquid diet. It turns out that he was sent home. He had continuing complaints of abdominal and back pain from prolonged violent retching. Sorry about the details, but when we talk about the non-economic damages, you'll see why it is that we did that. Anyway, long story short, it took 6 weeks before his symptoms totally resolved. Saw his primary care physician for blood work. 6 weeks later, final follow-up, symptoms completely resolved. So there's a lawsuit that's filed, and it's filed under the Products Liability Act. And one reason for that is that it entitles you to more damages than just a simple negligence claim. So they filed that claim, and they got a default against Mr. Ahmed and the other owner of the restaurant. And so now they proceeded to a hearing. The court from the medical records found that the doctors had ruled out the other two causes, peptic ulcer disease, upper GI bleed. So there was a basis for the court to conclude that the horrible problems caused by the food was a substantial factor in what happened here. So now we get to damages, and this is sort of interesting, okay? There's two parts to damages. There's economic damages, and there's non-economic damages. Economic damages, that's your bills. These are what we say is calculable, okay? So they had two bills for medical expenses, and they totaled $7,171. There's no lost wage claim. There's no claim about impaired earnings capacity or anything of that sort. But the reason I went through that somewhat gory, detailed description of the that the court found for Mr. Gibbs's suffering is because that leads us to the economic damages. This is compensation for the pain, the suffering that you went through, that you're likely to go through again in the future. If any, it's compensation for things you would otherwise be able to do that you cannot do, things that you otherwise would be able to do that you cannot do as well or as long. Okay, got the picture? Non-economic damages are usually painted with a pretty broad brush, because unlike economic damages, you can't run them through a calculator and come up with a figure to the cent. Well, in this case here, the court asked the plaintiff's attorney for a memorandum with recommended damages, and the plaintiff's attorney asked for the total economic damages of the $7,171, but then it asked for non-economic damages of, get this, $42,803.63. Where the heck did that come from? Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that after the break. We're going to talk about why it is that we think that the court went along with that, what the goal of it was, and we're going to talk about the takeaway for both the injured person, the food poisonee in this case, and some advice for the person that's the defendant, the food poisoner, as it was. But we're going to have to take a break, and we're going to follow up with that. We're going to do all of that after this. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. You are listening to Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com, streaming audio on the net.
And now, back to Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Okay, welcome back. I am Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. We're here filling you in on some new recent developments. Also very interested in helping you out personally. You got a legal issue, a legal question, a legal comment. We're here to try to help, and we do that by taking your phone call. That's 860-522-9842, 860-522-WTIC. What a coincidence. Okay, just before the break, we're talking about this food poisoning case, and we talked about the fact that there was a default. The plaintiff still had to prove causation, and then when it came to damages, the court accepted the economic damages, the $7,171 and change, and the plaintiff's attorney filed a request for non-economic damages, pain and suffering, the inability to enjoy life for as long as that lasted, etc., 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 in a very unusual amount. The court basically wrote a memorandum of decision. That's how they conclude these, and that's what we were quoting from to have our facts straight. The court then went ahead and ordered exactly what the plaintiff had asked for. So the total damages is exactly $50,000. Why in the world would somebody do that, and what are the takeaways here? Okay, first of all, why did they ask specifically for non-economic damages in that amount? They could have asked for $50,000, $75,000. It would have been up to the court to decide the amount, but they picked this very, very unusual amount right to the cent. Well, the clue, I think, because I don't know, but we're speculating here, is that it brought the total to $50,000. So even though the defendants had been defaulted, there's probably some sort of insurance company policy out there somewhere with a $50,000 limit. So that's what we suspect, and that non-economic damages component of the judgment was designed to fill in the difference between the economic damages, which for some reason were limited just to medical expenses with no loss of earnings, no loss of wages, nothing else, to bring it up to that limit. So what are the takeaways from this case? Because that's one of the things that we like to do here, not just tell you about them, but say, well, what does this tell us and what can we learn from it? So here's some takeaways from it. Number one, if you are the plaintiff and you are in a position like this, ask your lawyer what the devil is taking so long. I mean, this was a 2013 food poisoning event. Lawsuit was filed in 2015, and this hearing that took place was in 2022. So that's 7 years from the time it was filed until there's a hearing on a hearing in damages where there had been no appearance by either of the defendants. So I went back and looked at the file. The only thing I could determine was that the attorney who filed it appeared to change law firms and went out on her own. Whether that plus COVID-related delays had something to do with it. Well, the court's been trying courtside cases remotely through much, if not most, of the COVID shutdown. So that probably isn't it. So plaintiffs, number one, ask your lawyer what's taking so long if you find you've got a delay like that. Second thing for plaintiffs, be prepared to prove causation even when the defendant has been defaulted as to liability. We focused here on the court's findings that the medical treaters ruled out peptic disease. They ruled out upper GI bleed. So that gave the court a basis to find, just as the doctors basically reached a diagnosis here through ruling out other things, that the acts or the omissions of the plaintiff were the cause of the suffering. Now let's shift to the other side of the equation here. You defendants, especially if you're in a business like this, why in the world are you not doing business through an entity? Traditionally, it was a corporation. It's ever since 1993 here in Connecticut, we've had limited liability companies. The whole purpose of these entities is to shield your personal assets from any business liabilities. If this had been an entity such as Ahmed LLC instead of Mr. Ahmed personally, it would have been a lot different. Done properly, his own personal assets would be out of reach, and personally he would have been insulated from liability for this. Well, why does that matter? Well, here's what happens. There's now a judgment against him and his partner. It's going to show up on their credit file, and that judgment is good for 20 years. So if somewhere down the road he decides, I'm going to open another business, I'm going to buy a house, the coast is clear, somebody can go and try to enforce that judgment for $50,000, and they will probably now have assets to reach. Not to mention the fact it stays on the credit file, and that's going to impact his ability and his cost of borrowing funds in the future. So that's the takeaway from our food poisoning case of Gibbs versus Ahmed. Now, we've got a couple of minutes before the break for news, sports, and weather headlines at the bottom of the half hour. I want to jump right into the case that we told you about medical records. And this one is a really interesting matter. We've all got medical records if we've ever seen or received any medical care whatsoever. Okay? So this is a story about what happened to a medical practice which erroneously released a patient's medical records. So here comes the facts. Andro and Emily were partners. Okay? They broke up. Andro filed a paternity action against Emily in probate court. Now, that seems a little bit unusual, but those are the facts of the case. Emily was and had been for a long time a patient of the defendant. The defendant is known as the Avery Center for OBGYN, and they provided her services of the sort that is listed in the name of their firm. Okay? Well, while this probate court paternity fight is going on, Andro serves a subpoena deuces tecum upon the Avery Center. Well, what's that, you say? Good question. Here's the answer. A subpoena deuces tecum is an order to appear at a legal event and to bring with you certain things. In this case, it was an order for the keeper of records for Avery Center for OBGYN to appear at the probate court and to bring with him or her the OBGYN records for Emily. Okay? So the practice, the defendant Avery Center decided that, well, we'll simply just copy her records, box them up, and they mailed them to the probate court. End of issue. The probate court, contrary to its own policies, left the medical records which it received, Emily's private personal OBGYN records, in a part of the file that was open to the public. Contrary to their own policies, done improperly. So Andro, who is sort of nosy, goes and looks at the court file, and eureka, he discovers all these medical records in there, so he reads them. Andro then gets in touch with Emily. He tells her that, well, he's now read all of her private medical records, and he starts a campaign of taunting and tormenting her about the information that is in those records. Emily was humiliated, mortified, filed an immediate motion with the probate court to seal the records. The records were sealed. It was granted. But was the damage done? Okay. Emily files a lawsuit against Avery, alleging violation of her right of privacy. And we're going to tell you all about that and what happened and what we can all learn from that. But we're going to do that on the backside of news, sports, and weather. So make sure you stick with us. I'm attorney John Matulis, and you're listening to Law Talk right here on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Yes, indeed, folks. Welcome back to Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. I'm attorney John Matulis. That Oldie But Goodie is our theme song for the second part of the show. That's the Bobby Fuller Four. Before we get back to the story about what happened when the OBGYN group erroneously released their patient's records to her opponent in some litigation, it's my job to remind you that if you do not have an attorney and you're looking for some high-quality legal advice, well, Law Talk would like to help with this. Haven't got the time. The Hartford County Bar Association operates a not-for-profit lawyer referral service. It is a good deal. It is an alternative far superior to hiring a lawyer off a billboard, off of some internet ad, off of some TV ad, or with the person on the next bar stool told you worked well for them. So here's the way it works. You phone them at the phone number that I'm going to give you in just a moment, and they will ask you a couple of questions to determine the nature of your legal issue. You then get referred to an attorney, but the attorney has been vetted, okay? They are experienced in the proper area of the law to help you. They are insured, and they are free of disciplinary problems. Not all of that is true of the folks you're going to encounter on your own. So what are you getting? What does it cost? Well, you get a half-hour consult with that attorney, and you can do that in the attorney's office. You can do it over the telephone. You can do it via Zoom, whatever the two of you agree upon. Now, the second part of it is, what does it cost? Okay, well, there's a one-time-only fee of $35, and that pays for a portion of the overhead costs of operating this not-for-profit program. There's phone expenses, there's staff expenses, there's rent, etc., so it applies towards that. But there's a couple of exceptions. Just like in the law where there are exceptions, well, there's some exceptions in this program, but these are good exceptions. First exception, if you call about your personal injury claim, no fee whatsoever. Second exception, if you call about your Social Security disability claim, no $35 fee, no fee at all. Third one, you've got a workers' comp claim. Guess what? That's an exception also. No fee for you either. Now, at the end of the half hour, no further obligations, no hard sell, but if further services are requested or desired, you and the attorney are free to discuss that. If you agree to go forward together, that's great. If you choose not to, that's great also. So how do you access this service? Here it comes. This is the phone number. You call them at 860-525-6052. That's 525-6052. That is the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service. It's at 860-525-6052. Give it a try. It's a great alternative to the other means of finding an attorney that we mentioned. And when you call, tell them that Law Talk sent you, okay? So getting back to our story, before the break for the news, we're talking about this lawsuit where Emily, the patient of Avery Center for OBGYN, had her medical records sent to the court. She didn't have them sent, but her opponent in this litigation subpoenaed them, and Avery basically said, oh, okay, and they boxed him up and sent him on to the court. Her opponent found that they had been left in a portion of the court file that was open to the public instead of being sealed, and called up Emily, let her know that he had read each and every one of her medical records from her OBGYN group, then started taunting her, tormenting her. Emily was humiliated, she was mortified, and she went into a severe emotional spiral downward. So she sued Avery, her practice. She alleged that they breached its contract with her by violating its privacy policy. In the waiting room at Avery, there's a sign on the wall that says, your privacy is important to us. We will not release your medical records. Well, guess what? The court felt that was an implied contract, and they breached it. Second count, she said they were negligent in disclosing this file and without letting her know about it, and that would have been required, so they violated federal and state law. The third one was that the conduct was what's called a negligent infliction of emotional distress, okay? So what did Avery do? Well, the first thing it did is it hired one of the best law firms in the state, Wigan and Dana, to defend it. Avery admitted, oh, we're bad, we messed up. But guess what? We're not liable for what happened to her. Why is that? Well, there's an intervening clause because the probate court clerk that violated the court's own policies and left these records in a publicly accessible place was really the cause of the injuries. So this case went on for a long time. There was an intervening bankruptcy. Emily moved to Vermont, but it finally got tried. And so this was presented to a jury, and the jury ruled on this matter in this lawsuit that was only against the OBGYN group. Did not sue a court. Court probably had judicial immunity anyway. Jury verdict for Emily. Now, this is almost all non-economic damages. What did they give her? $853,000, okay? On top of that, the judge, who was entitled to do so, awarded her what is called offer of judgment interest and post-judgment interest. Offer of judgment interest, because this was filed so early on in the case, that was still the name for it, basically is a piece of paper, and it says, we, the plaintiffs, agree that we'll settle this case with a judgment for X dollars, and the defendant has 30 days in which to agree to that. If they agree, the case is over, and there's now an enforceable contract for the defendant to pay X dollars. If they don't agree, the order is considered withdrawn. Now, this is a big incentive for defendants to try to settle cases. If the plaintiff has to go and try the case and recovers an amount more than the offer for which they had agreed to settle it, the court will impose what's called offer of judgment, or it's now called offer of compromise interest, retroactive to the day the case was filed. Trial judge imposed retroactive interest at 12%. On top of that, the plaintiffs had asked for what's called post-judgment interest, and the court agreed, and the court said, yeah, and on top of that, we're going to give it 8% of judgment post-judgment interest, so while this whole amount is going forward, if it's not paid, it's going to accrue at that rate. Avery, of course, took an appeal. It was handled by a guy named Jeff Babin, whom I actually had some business with some years ago, just an excellent, very, very well-regarded appellate lawyer. The appellate court said, nope, we're not going to disturb this one. And so this, by this point, the judgment has now grown to $1.4 million. Significantly, the original figure was less than a million. With judgment, post-judgment interest, with offer of judgment interest, it's now almost 1.5 times that amount, but it's over a million. Lots of medical practices have coverage of $1 million per occurrence, and that may have been the coverage limit here. So now what happens to the $400,000 for which there may not be insurance coverage? Well, we'll wait to see what happens. So here's the takeaways for this. First of all, this is basically emotional distress litigation. Often those are not taken as seriously as the plaintiffs would like. In an earlier phase of my career when I did insurance defense work, we used to welcome cases where plaintiffs claimed emotional distress. And the reason for that is because there's very little objective proof. It's not like a broken leg where you can show an x-ray or a cast that kept the leg in place. And generally also, there's a number of other factors in anybody's life that might be causing or contributing to the emotional distress. You had a problem with a personal relationship? Maybe that's the cause of the emotional distress. You got money problems? Well, maybe that's it instead of what you claim we did to you. There's stress at work. So you get the idea. And that used to disturb a lot of plaintiffs from pursuing emotional distress claims. Well, here, this case stands for the principle that tried properly, thoroughly prepared, the jury must have really put itself collectively into Emily's shoes, because that's a really significant award for emotional distress, notwithstanding the fact that there was another party that may have been liable for it. So the offer of judgment interest, okay, like I said, relates back to the filing of the complaint. The court, it's not the jury, it's the judge who awards that. Now, the rules have changed. It's now called offer of compromise. These can be filed by the defendants also. So there's not a judgment that enters if the parties agree. It's a contract that results. Long story short, emotional distress cases, properly tried in the proper case, can yield substantial results. That's my story. We're going to be back with more of Law Talk, but I'm told that we've got to take a break, and so we're going to do exactly that in just a second. You're listening to Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. Okay, welcome back to Law Talk. That is our house, and the reason we selected that is because our next segment here comes from a visit to the housing court, and it has to do with, guess what, landlord-tenant relations. Past history tells me that there's a lot of interest among our listeners, a lot of whom are landlords and a lot of whom are tenants. So this is going to be another visit to housing court, and there's something in this for everyone. So listen up. This is a case from the housing court in Rockville. It's called Tedford versus Fleming. It was a long-running fight. The particular part that we're going to talk about is after the eviction is over. And in this case, the eviction was very, very vigorously contested, but eventually granted. So now the landlord goes and sues the tenants for damages. And so this decision has a lot to tell us. Similar to another case previously that we discussed earlier today, the defendants who had vigorously fought the eviction didn't even appear in respect to this action for monetary damages. So the plaintiff had to put on the case. There was no objection, and the court had to rule on their various claims for damages. So here comes the part of it that is helpful. Okay, first of all, as a court points out, a landlord rents his property subject to the expectation of reasonable wear and tear. Tenant is not liable for routine cleaning, repainting, and correcting minor damages. Okay? So the landlord replaced the stove in the unit, and the testimony was that it was part of an effort to get the apartment ready to lease to new tenants. Now, the landlord was apparently questioned by the judge, since there were no defendants, admitted the stove that was there was fully functional, was very dirty and damaged. And so the court ruled, well, the defendants are not going to be liable for the replacement of appliances as the landlord prepares the apartment for leasing to new tenants. Second problem, there was damage to the doors, the drafts. The court wrote that while at first glance the damage appears severe, it is considered by this court to also be the result of ordinary wear and tear. Wow. Okay. So what's going on here? Lastly, the landlord had asked the court for a monetary recovery for his time to clean the apartment. Okay. The judge says the defendants are not to be held responsible for the labor cost the landlord paid his family and friends to assist with the cleanup. And he goes on to say that, after all, repainting and cleaning are not unusual expenses to incur at the end of a tenancy. And he cites another case from another Superior Court judge. Okay, so let's take a look at what's happened here. This is an owner of a unit who, after a very, very vigorously contested eviction, finally regains possession of the property. And now he's incurred a number of different expenses. And under the terms of the lease, he's asking the court to order that he be reimbursed for these expenses. Well, we put in a new stove to get it ready. Court says, no, too bad. You admitted that the old one still worked, so we're not going to order them to pay you the new stove. Okay? The next thing, and this is an important one for landlords to keep in mind, the landlord apparently submitted a bill for the reasonable value of his labor and for those of family and friends in cleaning the place, getting it ready to be re-rented. Sounds like they should be reimbursed for that, no? Well, the court said no. And there's a quote in here about the landlord should not be paid for getting his own property ready. Here's what I think is going on there. So before you landlords basically, you know, blow a gasket, I can sort of see that out of your ears. I think that what the court is saying is if you hire a commercial service to do this work, first of all, we've got at least a couple of checks on the reasonable value of the work because the marketplace will determine what's reasonable. You're not going to hire somebody that's at the very, very high end of the market to get the work done because you got to pay them. So there's no real check on the reasonable value of the work that you and your family and your friends did. And if you calculated based on some mythical per hour rate, well, how do we know that it took the X number of hours that you're charging for when maybe the reasonable cost of doing that would have been some portion of that by a commercial firm? So takeaway on that one for landlords is you should think twice about whether or not you're going to hire a commercial firm or whether you're going to do this yourself, especially if you expect that you're going to try to recover the cost of you and your family and your friends doing the work. Okay? So I don't, and remember, this is one particular judge. However, I don't think that you're going to find a lot of deviation from this. You know, there is a strong effort to try to make these rulings uniform. So let me tell you about the rest of this, because there's some news that's a little better. There's some news that may be a little bit disappointing. There were several other elements of the landlord's claim. Okay, the court awarded back rent. Now, this unit, according to the file that I looked at online, rented for $2,100 per month. The back rent, the court awarded $47,723. So it's probably a couple of years worth of back rent. And it looked like at least a year had been accumulated before the litigation started. So if you are a landlord, you should not allow yourself to have an arrearage of that nature built up. The second thing here is there's an entry for cost of eviction, $3,250. That's the cost of the movers that had to move the tenant out. And the court is allowing that, and the judgment will enter for that. What's the takeaway on that issue? Well, yeah, you'll get paid as long as it looks reasonable in the form of a judgment. But at the same time, you might want to consider telling these tenants, look, if you leave now, I'll drop some part of this claim, because otherwise you just shelled out $3,250. The good news here, the court gave you a judgment which includes that. The bad news, we'll get to that in just a minute. Marshall's fees, $107.37. Well, the court awarded that. That's not too significant. And there's a small attorney's fee because the lease limits it to 15%. Okay, now here comes the rest of it. The court orders as follows. Quote, the defendants must begin making weekly payments of $35 beginning May 22nd, tomorrow, payable to the plaintiff's attorney. Quick back of the envelope calculation, it's going to take about 20 years for that to be paid off. So the takeaway on this, if you are a landlord, be very, very circumspect about having a lot of work done by others. If you are a tenant, try to avoid this. It stays on your record. That music says it's time for me to thank my producer, Tom, for doing the show with me. Thank you all for listening, and we will catch you soon, as they say in radio.
Law Talk is presented as a public service by the Hartford County Bar Association. Its content is intended to be educational and informative, but is not considered to be formal legal opinion. If you want or need a formal legal opinion upon which to rely in decision-making, please consider formally engaging an attorney to review all relevant facts in detail and examine the pertinent law as it applies to those facts. A solid opinion means better decisions. The views expressed during this program are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of the Hartford County Bar Association, its officers, or its directors.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.